everybody. Bob Ufer here in the chilly snake pit of Columbus, Ohio.
Elliott has the first down and more, and Elliott's going to have a touchdown.
Carl, watch out. Blake Carl, blazing speed. Could he get there? No. But he's down at the Ohio State 11.
Samuel cuts it back. Ohio State wins.
Stroud in trouble, and Stroud is sacked again.
There's nothing quite like the game.
Michigan versus Ohio State, the game of the day, the game of the year, the game of the decade. Call it what you will.
This is The Rivalry, sponsored by Elevated Integrity Construction.
This is The Rivalry Podcast. Jace, JP, a very merry post-Christmas to you.
Wow.
I know. We are your garbage-free sports podcast, college football, and focus only on the Michigan-Ohio State football rivalry. On Twitter, which is the only place we're at, if Elon Musk is listening. On Twitter at RiflePod. Definitely not also on Instagram at 1049 The River or on YouTube.
Never. We would never.
When you search River now. We're going to run a little wheel route. Want to say a big thanks to Elevated Integrity Construction for sponsoring season 4 of The Rivalry Podcast. Whether you're doing a home build, church build, they do not only the construction, but the design element as well. If you've got a project, no one else you should go with, go with Integrity. It's elevatedintegrity.com.
A statement I've never agreed with more. Cheesecake is, in fact, everything, thanks to Philadelphia, apparently, the sponsor of this.
This is why we can't ever get rid of the ads on Wheel Route.
Most factual statement probably ever said on this podcast right there.
Again, if you're not watching this episode on YouTube, you should. Just search River Now on Ye Olde Tube and pull this up. All right, what do we got for Wheel Route today?
I knew it was going to do this one. I knew it
favorite.
When I was...
moment for your team.
I know what you want to say. Switch it up and don't do the obvious.
Favorite
give me something different.
Moment for
give
your
me
team.
Something different. Now,
here's the thing, though. Like,
throw it back a little bit.
Okay, but here's the thing. I'm 30. Okay, I'm a man.
I'm a man.
My adult life has been plagued by nothing but losses to Ohio State.
Those are my favorite memories.
So I mean, of what I like, yeah, you could dive in and be like, well, you were alive for the 1997-98 national championship. Yeah, I was 5. I don't remember that.
Get a better memory.
I don't. You know what? I'm going to take Michigan over Ohio State last year's edition because I actually got to be at the game, had never been to a Michigan-Ohio State game before. And that was just the snow, the rush in the field, the whole thing. That's got to be top. Like, just, I don't see that being topped for
me. Just for fun, outside of an Ohio State memory, what is a Michigan fan's favorite memory?
The Braylon Fest against Michigan State.
Okay.
That massive comeback where Michigan ends up beating State in triple overtime. Braylon Edwards just goes crazy. And then Braylon Edwards has since just kind of gone crazy. I follow him on Twitter and immediately regret it every time.
Not on other platforms.
Because we only operate on one platform, Elon Musk. I'd say Braylon Fest, which would have been 2003, 2004, somewhere in there.
Okay. I will say, am I allowed to say a Rutgers one too? There's not many to choose from. It'll go quick.
Really? Rutgers is where you want to go?
No, I'm going to go Ohio.
Memories of football?
I'm going to go Ohio State. I'm going to go Ohio State first, then I'll throw in a nice little Rutgers one to show them some love. Oh, man, there are so many good ones. I'm going to go with the Ezekiel Elliott run against Alabama in the college football playoffs. I think that was a similar situation to what Ohio State's going into this upcoming weekend against Georgia, where nobody on this world that wasn't a Buckeye nut didn't think they stood a chance. And there are so many moments of that game that stuck out to me. The weird trick play with, I don't even remember what the receiver's name was, that threw just an absolute dime to, I think it was it Michael Thomas?
I have erased memories of that entire Ohio State national.
It was just
championship
a phenomenal, phenomenal catch. Then you had the nice defensive touchdown. Then you had Ezekiel Elliott running through the heart of the South. And I loved it every single minute of that. And I think I know it's Ohio State, so you're obviously not going to love it. But watching Alabama lose in any game, especially one that's meaningful, is something we could all get behind. So that was one of mine.
I wish it were different methods.
That's fair. But I knew that you wouldn't fully agree with it. But that part, Alabama losing, was just chef's kiss. For Rutgers, and this is a little clip on YouTube, barely visible because it was so many years ago. A running back, Juwan Jameson, hitting a nasty spin move against the University of South Florida. That was like video game esque that I remember sitting in my dorm room, which makes me feel old because it was 10 plus years ago almost. And him hitting this and me just running out into the hallway, just screaming because it was one of the filthiest. It was Braxton Miller against Virginia Tech style spin move. You can find it on YouTube. You have to really squint, though, because it looks like it was filmed through a potato. But it was amazing. It was one of the coolest moves I've ever seen.
We've now spent far too much time talking about happy Rutgers football memories.
Look, after the season I just had, give me a little bit of time.
Do you want to hear my favorite Rutgers football memory?
Nope.
I've got 78 reasons why you should hear my favorite Rutgers football memory.
You know what my favorite one was? When Kamoko Turi blocked the game-winning field goal.
Blocking a Brady Hoke Michigan team's field goal.
In the column, is it a dub or an L?
You can
have that. Is it a dub or an L?
Let's move on before we have to talk more about Rutgers and we lose all three of our subscribers. How about the transfer portal? Because the transfer portal is a wild, weird place.
It has been this year... Unreal. There's a lot of talent.
There's so much
that is going into this. A lot of grad transfers that are going into this.
And I totally get to the, you know, it's similar to NIL in the sense of it's not going anywhere, but I don't know what to do with it. I don't love it, but it's here.
It's crazier because of the NIL now when these teams go in there. And I think I saw a stat and I'm going to screw these numbers up, but it said like there's 16,000 players or maybe it was even 6,000 players in NCAA Division I football and like 1,000 of them or something. It was a significant number of them are in the transfer portal this year.
It's just insane. And I'm not even saying it's all bad. You know,
interesting.
I get guys want to go play, especially if you think you have a shot at the NFL or maybe you know that you don't and you just want to go get 3 years of eligibility actually playing the game.
Or nine if you're whatever that one dude from Oregon, I think is what it was.
Like that's fine. There's so much wrapped into it that the amateur nature of the game is gone in so many ways. And I'm not saying that NIL is bad. I think it's good that players can make money off that. There's just so much unknown.
It's clear impact.
Yeah. It's chaotic. It's chaotic. Some of the chaos though is beneficial for Michigan right now because Michigan is absolutely killing the transfer portal. We're recording this. A lot can change from recording time to publish time, but right now, as of recording, Michigan has the number one transfer portal class, if you will, in the country. And the transfer portal is interesting because I wouldn't say it's more important than your high school like recruiting class, but it's a different level because Michigan is landing guys. They just landed,
four-star guy.
Yeah, they just landed Josiah, and I'm blanking on his last name, from Coastal Carolina. They just got a couple offensive linemen from Stanford. They have currently the number one player in the transfer portal is a linebacker out of Nebraska who just committed to Michigan. These are not... The reason I differentiate between the high school recruits is because, you know, you may have a 4 or 5-star recruit who doesn't play for a couple years or who doesn't pan out. It's like rookies going in the NFL and they end up being busts, that sort of thing. When it's guys that are coming from other schools, like these guys that are coming from Stanford, these are tried and true guys who have played at this level, who have been good at this level, who are now essentially plug and play for next year.
Yeah. Well, it's like you said, you guys got the 4-star, I think he was an O-lineman. And you're getting these guys that were highly recruited. They're not grad seniors that were third string on the bench that you're just getting on your practice squad. These are guys that have untapped potential.
This guy from Nebraska, Hausman, I think is his name. Yeah. But this guy from Nebraska has 3 years of eligibility left. And again, number one guy in the transfer portal. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be a bust. He's played the position. It's a plug and play. So if you're Michigan, this is really good right now for 2023, because you've got the first ever back-to-back Joe Moore Award winners in best offensive line in the country. Won it last year, won it again this year. And now you've got two guys coming in from Stanford who are going to be plug and play on that offensive line. You have a chance
reloading.
Somehow, some way the offensive line was better this year than last year and could be better in 23 than it was in 22. Mm-hmm. Same thing with the defense, where you're plugging in guys from Coastal Carolina and guys from Nebraska. Somehow this year, even with the loss of Hutchinson and Ojabo, Michigan's defense is arguably better this year than it was last year and could be better in 23 than 22. This is all really good news for Michigan. I've been impressed with how well they've used the portal, and other teams are doing it well as well. Where it gets really interesting is when guys are going to commit out of the portal, you tend to not see the decommitting once you've committed out of the portal. It's just a completely different animal. Ohio State is dealing with kind of the negative side of that, of the high school recruiting side, with Raiola, five-star quarterback,
decommitting.
How do you feel about that? I mean, I know how you feel about the decommitting, but does that concern you at all?
It's not good. It makes sense. His uncle, I think, from what I saw, is a coach over at Nebraska. Yep. Everybody is kind of predicting that that's where he's going to end up going now. There's also speculation because Ohio State had brought in another five-star quarterback just like this past weekend for a visit, and he was kind of under the assumption that they weren't going to look at any other quarterbacks, that he was going to be their guy, he was going to be the commitment. And when they went out and did that, I think it kind of irritated him a little bit. We'll see. It's so tough because sometimes you can get these five-star guys and it just doesn't matter. They could end up being bust. You don't really know what you're getting. It's not like you've seen him play at the collegiate level to know what he's really going to be. If he ends up being a stud, obviously you're going to look back at it and go, man, that really sucks. I wish we would have been able to keep him. Right now, Ohio State is still Ohio State. It sounds cocky, but I would say the same with Michigan.
Yeah, you're not going to hurt find at the end of the day.
Yeah, they're not gonna hurt for talent. It's more right now I'm more concerned with focusing on the coaching aspect of things. Yep. I think the talent is there. And I forget this quote. We talked about it last week a little bit, where somebody was talking about the difference between Michigan and Ohio State this year. And the guy was saying, if you look over at the Ohio State side of the ball, they have athletes. They have flashy offensive. Yeah. You go in their garage and they've got Ferraris and Lamborghinis all over the place. Michigan is a group of football players. They recruit football players. And that is the difference. And you could kind of tell in the past two seasons, Ohio State has a bunch of offensive players that are going to go to the NFL. Look at Olave. Look at Garrett Wilson going out there.
Jigba is going to be a high draft pick.
Yeah.
Stroud will
arguably both in the first round. Stroud for sure. You look at these guys and you're like, man, how can they just not get over the hump? And I think that's the big difference. So I'm more concerned with getting players like that than what they previously had before Raiola decommitted, where they had the number one and number two guy.
Right.
That's all great. It's stuff to be excited about, but it doesn't raise concern unless you start losing a group of them and you're losing them to your opponent like Michigan.
Well, and that's really, I think that's a fair assessment. Obviously Michigan guys like myself are going to be all over a decommit like that.
Yeah.
But the reality is that you have a 4 or 5 star in the 23 class. I think Raiola was the 24 class. So, so there's time to find somebody. I don't think that that's a major source of concern. The wide receiving core just continues to get better and better.
Yeah.
I would say this though. I would say one area that I would be concerned is the guys that, you know, we talked about this after the game, but the guys who are on official visits to Ohio State that commit to Michigan. And we talked through, well, you know, they didn't have offers. Bro, you're on your official visit at Ohio State celebrating on the field with Michigan. That's more of a concern. That's the stuff
that should not be acceptable.
That's more of a concern if I'm a Buckeye than Raiola decommitting.
Yeah.
That's more of just a kind of flashy, fun talking point for right now. Now, if they end up not having a good quarterback next year and they struggle in recruiting, okay, at that point,
you can
point,
look back at sure, it and at you can kind of go, okay, we've got to get something sorted out here. Ohio State's been blessed incredibly the past few years of having Justin Fields, CJ Stroud, Dwayne Haskins. Yeah. I mean,
in areas where Michigan wasn't blessed in those ways.
Yeah.
And I think I would say even now though, within the last couple years, while Ohio State is still, like you said, kind of that sports car mentality, Michigan's added some of their own. Like, this is not just a, and I don't think you're saying this, but Michigan's not just, you know, it's Ferraris versus pickups. You know,
no,
it's like, no, my goodness.
Attitude-wise, I would say.
I think to an extent.
As an overall.
But I look at guys like Blake Corman, Donovan Edwards, and guys like J.J. McCarthy. I look at some of the signings Michigan, Oluwatimi, and I grant he's a center, but if we're talking skill positions even, I mean, Cole Cabana's about to commit. I mean, Michigan's got horses, and it's making it really fun. But even the perception, I think, of Michigan as a football program is starting to shift into a lot of those more flashy skill positions. But I agree, their identity is still, we're going to run the ball down your throat until you stop.
Well, see, to me, that is a football team. That is a gritty.
You've got to be able to do both. If you want to be
real. That's a gritty, tough football team. And I think you're correct. I think those are elite athletes, but they're not flashy. Blake Corm is not a flashy guy to me.
Really?
He is.
I don't agree with that.
I'm not saying that as a bad thing. I'm saying he knows what he's going to do. He's going to run it right up the gut all the time, and you're not going to stop him. There's a difference to me between like a Marvin Harrison that is doing highlight level catches all the time, and Blake Corm, who is going to go out there and give you a highlight performance where he's going to get 200 yards on the ground and 5 touchdowns. He's not hitting a crazy juke or doing anything like that. He is just a tough runner.
Have you watched any Blake Corm this year?
Clearly not. I haven't, because he's been sitting out past couple games. But
you know what? Undefeated teams only talking right now.
It's not just a game, it's the game. You're listening to The Rivalry.
Let's jump into the playoff scenario. Let's start Michigan-TCU. Fiesta Bowl is going to be the early game, 4 p.m. Eastern. This is a tough one for me to figure out, man. And we've talked a little bit about this. TCU is a strange team. Not just because Horned Frogs can shoot blood out of their eyes. Like, that's kind of bizarre.
Did you look that up or did you know that before this?
Man, I homeschooled. I knew this. I've known this for years. Don't come at me on trivia night. No, TCU is an interesting team. I think there's a perception, at least in the media, that Michigan is just going to, this perception that Michigan is just going to steamroll TCU, it's a weak Big 12 team, and Michigan, again, because they play that smash mouth style of football, they'll just run over them. I don't buy that. And I don't think you should either. If you do, Max Duggan won quarterback of the year. We talked about this last episode. Heisman runner up, quarterback of the year. Johnson is a phenomenal wide receiver. Hodges Tomlinson won, what was it?
Jim Thorpe.
Yeah, Jim Thorpe Award. Sonny Dykes won coach of the year. I don't remember the offensive coordinator, but he just won the Broyles Award.
Yeah, the offensive or the assistant coach.
Best assistant in the country. Hardware doesn't win football games, but it sure helps.
Yeah.
So TCU is coming in with monkey on their back because nobody believes in them. And they're bringing in a whole bunch of hardware. It's kind of the Deion Sanders, I'm bringing my bag and it's Louis.
Phenomenal line, by the way. Can we talk about that for just a second?
Jackson State then lost. So I don't know if it's more Louis or Lululemon.
Luggage was already in Colorado. That's fair.
Travis Hunter's going to be a big problem in the Pac-12. I can tell you that. My goodness. So TCU's coming in with this underdog mentality. They believe in themselves. They've got the hardware to prove it.
Mm-hmm.
But no one's given them any respect. And that concerns me as a Michigan fan. What I expect to see is this. Let me put it this way. Here's what's going to have to happen for both teams.
Okay.
Michigan is going to have to be as balanced as they've been the last two games. Because TCU, and I saw a number of folks saying this, TCU is going to do the same thing Ohio State did, which is we're going to blitz you and try and stop the run.
Mm-hmm.
The Michigan's offensive line, obviously extremely good. We mentioned the Joe Moore Award again. Offensive line's extremely good. TCU is going to sell out to try to stop the run. And JJ is going to have to do the same thing he's done the last couple games, which is complete passes downfield.
Which, when you got a Jim Thorpe Award winner,
becomes difficult.
It makes it difficult.
And again, this is not, it's meant to be a slight at Ohio State, but it's not just that. Ohio State doesn't have that on the back end.
Yeah.
Ohio State doesn't have that on the back end. If I'm TCU, the strategy to win this game is you've got to convert in the red zone. Michigan's going to run this bend, don't break type of zone defense again.
Yeah.
They're going to do that to try to slow down Duggan and the connection to Johnson. When you do that, TCU is going to pick up yards a lot like Purdue did. What was Purdue's fatal flaw? One of the main fatal flaws in that Purdue game on the bend don't break type of defense was they kicked a butt ton of field goals.
Yep.
They could not get into the end zone. They threw interceptions and they kicked field goals. That game is very different if Purdue starts converting in the red zone. Now, credit to Michigan's defense. They know what they're doing. If TCU can find ways to get into the end zone, this becomes a real interesting football game. The concern for me is the bend don't break zone defense gives opportunity for Max Duggan to use his legs because you pull back a little bit. You play that soft zone. And if you get caught out of position, you're caught out of position.
And Michigan hasn't really played anybody with that capability.
We've not seen a truly mobile quarterback like
this. Not of that nature.
So I think that could prove trouble for Michigan. Yeah, before I give my score prediction, I don't know. What are your thoughts outside looking in here?
That's hard.
What I'm trying to... That's the type of thing I'm looking for.
I get all of that. I get the same sense from people that they think the Michigan's just going to run all over TCU.
This is Alabama, Cincinnati of years past.
I'm having a hard time not buying into it because I don't think TCU's played anybody even remotely close to Michigan. And they've played a lot of ranked teams.
Kansas State, who they did beat once. Texas, who they beat on the road.
I just don't know if I respect those teams enough to give them as much credit as I want to. I respect Max Duggan. I think, like you said, hardware doesn't lie. You're going up against every single person in the NCAA, and you're winning these awards. Yep. That speaks
both
something
to me.
Both
sides of the ball and two coaches.
Yeah, that speaks something to me. I don't think it's going to be a blowout. I don't think this is going to be something that you're going to look at like Alabama, Cincinnati. I just think Michigan's too tough of a team. I think defensively, while TCU still has some playmakers, I think they're just outmanned. I think eventually they'll wear down on the run and you'll see Donovan Edwards kind of have himself a day. It'll open up the passing game for McCarthy to convert when he needs to. I've got a final score 31-21. As of now, right now, the line I think is 7.5 favoring Michigan. I got Michigan going up 10 and taking it.
From your lips to God's ears, my friend. Yeah, I think the trenches are the big place where Michigan should have success. The concern is, well, what happens if you don't? But again, Michigan should have success in the trenches. If at some point, Michigan fans, if Michigan is not having success on either side of the line, you should be concerned at this point.
And I think this is a game where a lot of people, because of the stakes of it all, are going to look at the first half and start criticizing. But Michigan they're always in a close game.
That's a solid point.
So if you're a Michigan fan and you're going in and it's 21-17 at half and you're losing or barely winning, I wouldn't be worried.
No,
because
I expect that.
I have this mentality now when it comes to Michigan, and I genuinely think that this is part of their plan. I think they know that they're good enough that they do the first half as kind of we're going to do a little test here. We're going to just see what they throw at us for the first half. We're going to figure out their game plan and we'll keep it close. And then in the second half, we know exactly what adjustments we need to make. We're going to make them and then we're going to dominate.
That's been tried
and true the entire season.
It's that sledgehammer mentality of this is who we are. And it's not just, we're just going to hand the ball off 1,000 times. Like they've shown some dynamic offense in the passing game. But especially on the offensive line, it's just, we're going to hit you and hit you and hit you and hit you. Mm-hmm. And by the mid-third quarter, it continues to yield results.
It's the grit that I was talking about at the beginning of the episode that makes them just a complete football team where they know we're bigger, we're better, we're badder, we're tougher. Yeah. We've got more grit than you. We want it more than you. And they're going to come out and they're going to let you think that you have a chance. And then eventually you're going to wear down because you just can't keep up with them.
And
that's where they're going to dominate. And that's where I think they can start to get away from TCU. I do think at halftime, TCU might have the lead.
I agree.
It would not surprise me at all. But I think midway through the fourth quarter, you're starting to see Michigan kind of pull away there.
And I think on the defensive side of the ball, I mean, even when, you know, I keep referencing this bend don't break, that's what they played against Ohio State. And second half was 28-3?
Yeah. Well, and if you're Michigan and even against Purdue,
I mean, bend don't break, they got yards and the defense did not I think, did not give up a touchdown in the second half of that game.
And if you're Michigan, you just do what you did against Ohio State in the third quarter, and you do a 9-minute drive that takes up the entire time. You don't give the Heisman runner-up a chance to do anything.
Yeah, and I think everything that we're hitting on here, and I think you genuinely made some really strong cases there. That's why I'm taking Michigan in this game. 38-24 is what I have.
I could see that.
I think TCU will score some points. I think Michigan will score. I think Michigan will score more. How's that for some analysis right there?
The
Michigan
most sense
will win because they will score. It's the John Madden thing.
No, it is Mike. What is it? Mike McDaniels or whatever, the Miami head coach, where he's literally said, you know, statistically, it's better when you score more points than your opponent. When
the ball crosses the goal line, it's a touchdown. It's worth 6 points. It's
Michigan
terrible.
Will have more of those than TCU, that's so they'll win the ball game.
Let's talk about the Peach Bowl in Atlanta. Georgia and Ohio State. This one, here's what I'll say. I'll let you take first shot at this. I will say this. This is as even a playoff field as I think we've seen.
Yes, I will give you that. Usually I feel like the fourth team
is kind of
you're like, this is going to be a massacre.
This playoff field is wide open. Any single one of these teams could win the whole thing. Any single one of these teams could win the whole thing.
I would say deserve it.
They've earned it.
Yeah.
Except for Ohio State, who backed their way into this one. Go ahead. Ohio State, Georgia, give me your thoughts.
As of now, Georgia is 6.5-point favorites. This feels very much like the Alabama game a few years ago, where I don't think anybody outside of Ohio State fans think that there's a legitimate shot. But I saw a tweet that I want to read that might calm you down. If you're a Buckeye fan, it might give you a little bit more security, because if you look at this, you've got Stetson Bennett. Apologies for last week if you tuned in. 40-year-old man.
I wouldn't apologize for that at all.
It was a true statement. I'll stand behind
it. You tagged him on Twitter.
I did.
Which is the only platform that we're on.
He probably saw it. But he was at the Heisman finale, or the Heisman whatever thing. I can't think of the term on the right now. He was there in his varsity jacket looking weird. John Mackey winner, the best tight end, Brock Bowers, is just an animal. The entire defense is only giving up 12.8 points a game. That's which wild. Is just disgusting. They've got a balanced offense, almost 300 yards passing, almost 200 on the ground. I mean, they all around, they look like a beast. But here's a little thing. So Ohio State's pass defense was second in the nation. The pass defense is number two in college football versus running backs and tight ends, but against wide receivers, they're 109th, which we noticed the secondary was lacking numerous games this past season. It's the clear weakness.
I can think of one in particular.
What is Georgia's passing profile? It's not 4 and 5 wide to wide receivers. 3 out of their 4 top pass catchers are running backs and tight ends, which is exactly OSU's strength. So if you're sitting there worried, I think that can give you a little bit of security. There are some notable things. We found out Travion Henderson's going to be out for it. We already knew weeks ago, Jackson Smith and Jigba said that he was going to be out. So you're expecting a fair dosage of Mayan Williams. You're expecting maybe Dallin Hayden to get some playing time. Everybody else, it's your normal go around. Yeah.
I think on the running back too, if I'm Ryan Day, you got to ride the hot hand.
Yeah.
You know, if 100%. It's not Williams, you gotta be able Dallin to switch.
Hayden. Yeah,
to
Dallin Hayden, which I would be comfortable with. I think I would be comfortable with that. This feels very much like a game that in order for Ohio State to win, because I think it is, this might be one of the toughest games they've played since the college football playoffs have been a thing. I think this is tougher maybe than
since that Alabama game.
I would say they were, I think back then Ohio State was a better team and it showed. I look at this team and I go, man, Georgia just all around has scary players on both sides of the ball. And the secondary worries me. The defensive side for Ohio State worries me a little bit. So reading that stat gave me a little bit more faith. I think for Ohio State to win this game, though, they've got to establish the run.
Yep.
They need a good game, not something crazy. They don't need 150, 200 yards from Mayan Williams. They just need effective running. They need to be able to open up the passing game, so they need to be able to give CJ Stroud time, and they have to force turnovers and get points off of those turnovers.
Stop reading my notes. They
need, I can see him right in front of me. Why would I not read them? They need to get at least a turnover or two in Georgia territory, and they can't settle for field goals. They've got to get touchdowns. I think if they can do two of those three things, they can upset them, and I'll save my prediction until after I hear you rip them apart.
No, but I don't. I think that's a pretty fair assessment because, again, as much crap as I will talk about Ohio State, and you've earned it, okay? Michigan has won the game twice in a row. You've earned it. Ohio State's not a bad football team.
Yeah.
And I think any Michigan fan who's been like, oh, they're terrible, they're awful. Stop. Get your head out of your butt. Can we say that on our River branded podcast?
We did. Too late.
Okay, cool.
Too late.
Cool, cool, cool.
TikToking it too.
Love that this is live. That's fantastic. TikToking it too. Nice. Yeah, for Ohio State, great offense. The offense is fantastic. The defense is a huge question mark. Mm-hmm. And
I would say maybe the best offense in the playoffs.
I would say maybe.
I wouldn't say it's super far separated. I would still put them at one. Maybe.
I think for Georgia, I mean, and again, this is so, it sounds so boilerplate, but Georgia's defense is just so good. So I looked, I didn't realize that they were averaging what, 12 and a half points. Yes,
12.8.
What I noticed, and I didn't run the math, but the only game giving up 23 or more points was LSU in the SEC championship.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone else has been 22 or less. That's insane. That's absolutely insane. Great tight end, suffocating defense. Stetson Bennett, as much as we've given him crap, he's a good quarterback. We were just saying he didn't deserve to be at the Heisman ceremony. He's like a
90-year-old man that eats grits. But
oh my gosh. Here's where I think I'll give some credit to Ohio State in the sense of here's where I think Georgia could be susceptible. Georgia played around a little bit with Kent State earlier in the year.
Mm-hmm.
They played around with Missouri. They played around with Kentucky. The Kent State game at the end of the day was a fairly 3-score spread.
Yeah.
That game was uncomfortable for them for a lot of it. Mizzou, 26-22. Kentucky, 16-6. Mizzou and Kentucky holding them to 26 and 16 respectively. That to me, if I'm a Georgia fan, that I'm circling that going, what the heck happened here?
Yeah.
Now, I will also say that they scored 50 on LSU. So everything's with a grain of salt, right? And I think that some of it is a little bit inconsistent there. By that same token, though, Ohio State has had their own struggles. Obviously, the Michigan game. But even in games that they won, Notre Dame, they trailed a lot of that game. Penn State, they trailed late. Maryland, they tried to give Maryland the football game. And Northwestern, I'll make an exception because of the weather. But again, they didn't play particularly well against Northwestern either. If I'm Georgia, here's how you win the game. No home runs. Mm-hmm. The way that Michigan scored points. And again, Michigan had success moving the ball. They had a 9-minute drive or whatever. It wasn't just home runs, but if you're Georgia, you cannot give up home run shots. 75-yard touchdown pass from Stroud, stuff like that. Mayan Williams rips one for 60. That's how you'll lose the game. If you're Georgia, if you don't let that happen, you should be good. If you're Ohio State, I wrote down turnover battle.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to create a couple turnovers. You create a couple turnovers, you probably win the football game.
See, and I think that's the takeaway for both teams. I think if you're Georgia, if you protect the ball, you could have a subpar performance, and I think you will win.
Correct.
If you're Ohio State,
if Tui Mololau goes all Penn State on him, it's hard to not win. It's hard to lose a football game when you're playing that well.
Yeah, and I don't think they're going to do something like that. But if you can get one or two takeaways and convert for touchdowns,
And there's your key again, because again, we talked about this with both the Penn State game and the Michigan game. Ohio State in the red zone had opportunities to really pull to increase that margin
two or three times in the first half.
And again, I'm not saying kill shot for either of those games by any stretch.
But I mean, clear separation.
21-10 or 21-3 over Michigan is a much different ball game.
And it changes the game plan. It's not necessarily a kill shot, but when you're going into a half down 24-10, it changes it in comparison to a 13-10.
Yep. Or at Penn State, they went into the half trailing, 14-13?
Yeah.
Could have easily been up about 21-10. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you. The turnover battle, I still don't believe that Ohio State has enough. My question is still from last episode, what's changed between the Michigan game and now? And my answer would be
preparation.
See, but I don't buy that because again, it's the same thing I said last episode. It's we saw this against Michigan. That was the case study. Brian Hartline, 365 days meant nothing. Ryan Day is talking about, we had a spirited practice. Cool, man. You had 365 days to prepare for Michigan, to prove yourself, to take the pressure, and you didn't do it at home. Why do I think you would do it in Atlanta?
See, I think there's a little bit of a difference because you have games in between that. You've got it. You can't solely focus on Michigan the entire. And I know that they do things throughout the year to keep their mind at that game.
If you, if you can't get up and execute for that game, I don't believe that in a month you are going to be able to turn around and suddenly beat Georgia. I just don't buy it.
I think you've got 2 weeks, and this is the thing I'm actually most excited about, is I want to see the attitude, because the Ohio State that I know that was dominant for years on years on years, I mean, they're still a dominant team.
Sure, for sure.
There was attitude about those teams where they came out and they wanted to hit you hard. They wanted to dominate the game from start to finish. And the past two Michigan games have kind of softened that a little bit. So I am so curious.
Did you say that they're soft?
I did not. That's not what I said.
TikTok that, Eric.
I am so curious to see how this team comes out mentally, because I want to see them come out. You've had weeks on weeks of preparation. You knew you were going to play Georgia. The second you got put into the playoffs, you knew your opponent was. And honestly, Friday night after the USC loss, you knew Georgia was they weren't going to lose. I think everybody thought they were going to beat LSU. You knew you were going to face Georgia. So from that moment on, I want to see what preparation was done. I want to see some tenacity when they get out there on the field. And I want to see a little bit of hunger.
Yeah.
I feel like this year, a lot of it was coasting. A lot of it was, we are clearly a talented team. We're just going to let the talent go. And I want to see them come out and defensively just absolutely attack the ball, just dominate it, be aggressive. That's what I'm hoping that I see from this Ohio State team.
I think you'll see that. But again, yes, you want to see that, but and I'm trying to truly unbiased, like, that sort of attitude alone can't win a football game, because I saw them come out with, when Ohio State drove the field to start the Michigan game, I sat back in my chair and whispered, "Uh-oh," to myself, because that looked like a team that was in it for redemption.
Yeah.
And I don't know what happened to that down the stretch. It was like when they started facing adversity, they folded.
And that's what I'm curious about, is I think they're going to come out with that intensity.
But what happens when they get down, or
one play call goes wrong that doesn't necessarily go in your favor, and it gives up a pass interference play or a false start or any of those things. Once it happens, it's going to crumble just like that flag did behind you.
Oh, man, that's not good.
And that's what I'm curious to see. I think it's hard to not be pumped up initially for a game of that stature.
But when things settle
I want to see, once the game settles in and you have something go wrong, how is this team going to respond? Because that's what's going to make the championship team. The team that's going to take home the trophy is a team that's going to have that.
And that's where, and I'll say this and then give the prediction, that's where I've been really impressed with Michigan both last year and this year. Ex-Wolverine Cade McNamara, not sure if you heard, he transferred to Iowa, said this last year. I believe it was after the Penn State game where he threw a pass to ex-Wolverine Eric Gall, who also transferred to Iowa, where he said, you know, Michigan teams in the past probably lose this game. Mm-hmm. And they found a way to do it last year. This year, a lot of the same thing. They've not been in danger of losing any game outside of that first half of Ohio State, I think, genuinely. That's a team that, in the midst of really strong adversity, they had nothing. JJ McCarthy, just kind of that calm, just a calm, cool, collected dude, throws the touchdown pass. And if you go and watch, there's some like cinematic highlights you can find on YouTube and stuff. They've got audio of him over on the bench after that first touchdown. And he's just looking at guys and he's going, "Don't get too high. Don't get too high." Just calming everybody down. That's the type of tenacity under control that I think that's a championship mentality.
That's why they're at.
42-30 Georgia.
High scoring.
I can't see. I think Ohio State will score points. I don't see them slowing down Georgia, and I don't think that Ohio State's got enough in the tank to beat Georgia. Georgia's a machine.
27-24 OSU.
Of course you did. Of course you did, because you're an idiot.
It's going to be a last second field goal. Noah Ruggles. It's not
Noah.
Take us home to the championship. Give us a rematch against Michigan.
Do you feel pleased?
TikTok.
Do you feel pleased with anything that you've done in your life up to this point?
When we come back and talk about the national championship game between Ohio State and Michigan in the rematch, absolutely.
Sure. Make sure you give your score prediction for the college football playoff semifinals, Michigan TCU and Ohio State Georgia, on Twitter at RivalPod, which is the only place that we are on social.
Why would we go to any of those other?
But maybe also on Instagram at 1049 The River. Thanks for watching and subscribing. Enjoy the semifinals and the rest of bowl season.
Go Bucks.
The Rivalry is a production of River Radio Ministries. Want live updates from the show? Follow us on Twitter at RivalPod for live tweets, score predictions, contests, and more. And make sure to follow us wherever you're listening now for new episodes every Wednesday. And if you like what you're hearing, tell a friend so they can listen too.